And give me half a second. I need to change out the laundry.
Oh, no. What are you going to change it to?
The dryer.
Oh, that's an odd thing to turn laundry into. Why would you turn laundry into the dryer? Wouldn't you just turn? I'm trying to figure this out. You just like to turn laundry into the dryer. If you turned it into the dryer, then you wouldn't have any laundry. You'd just have a dryer. This is odd and confusing to me. I do not understand. Because you need to... Wow. I can't figure it out. I'll ask Ian when he gets back.
Sorry about that.
So, Ian?
Yeah?
If you are turning the laundry into the dryer, wouldn't that mean you no longer have laundry and you have two dryers?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was trying to figure out, and I was confused about that because I'm like, why would you turn the laundry into the dryer if you already have a dryer? And I was just confused.
So, it's actually a bit of a problem. We're running out of space. I have so many dryers now because the laundry keeps turning into it.
Okay. Wow. All right. I don't know what kind of magic you have. You could sell them dryers, man. You could open a dryer store.
You would think that, but the aftermarket for magically produced dryers is not that great.
Yeah, appliance sales are down, but I think you could make it work, especially since you have an unlimited supply.
Well, no, I have to have laundry to begin with, and you know, clothes are expensive. I would lose the money just buying a wardrobe enough to make a laundry mat.
Well, can't you buy like the cheapest of the cheap? How many clothes constitute a laundry?
Depends on the load.
Can you have one article of clothing? Is that a laundry?
No, I tried that. All it came out was like a dryer sheet.
Oh, well, hey, they come with dryer sheets. That's a marketing tool you can use.
I suppose. I just didn't really want to get into alchemy. You know, it's a fun hobby project, but it's not really something I want to do with my life.
Oh, that's a shame, man. You could really make some money doing that.
Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that man who's freshly in stock for the holidays, Kyle Krause.
Oh, man, you can buy me now. I don't know how much you'll pay. Just don't pay scammer prices. Don't pay more than $80 for me.
Especially since they only ship like two of you to every EB within the state.
Oh, that's fine. Also, it'd be a little awkward because EB Games doesn't exist anymore in the States. So it'd be a little really awkward. So what's that?
I didn't remember them being completely out in the States. There's like one near me.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's the exact same as GameStop because they acquired them, but it's still an EB. So
yeah. I was there. I went there. I went there with you when I was up there. And I was like, wow. There's an actual EB Games here. I mean, it is a GameStop, but it's branded as an EB Games. It's like, well, that's weird. Because, yeah, they're, as far as I know, like, everything's just been converted to GameStop in the States. There is no EB.
So sad.
That's okay.
Maybe not really.
I liked EB better when it was Electronics Boutique anyway. And I liked it before that. I liked it better when it was called Babbage's. Babbage's.
I'd forgotten it was Babbage's.
I think Babbage's was a competitor to Electronics Boutique. I could be wrong about that. It's been so long.
That's a fun name to say.
I think they all Babbage's. I think they all acquired each other and some weird crap went on, and then they all became GameStop, and now they're all homogenous and boring.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yep. So how you doing, sir?
Oh, I am super excited because as I've been teasing with that hashtag knowing smile on Twitter, there is a lot coming up in the next couple weeks. There's going to be a and then shortly after that, I'm going to.
Now, if anybody can reverse engineer that to figure out what Ian's actually saying,
don't,
go for
don't
it.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Do it. I
you
don't
won't
know,
like the answer.
I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how, but if
they
you
don't
can,
need to find a way. What are you up to? Let's change the topic. How are you doing?
Well, I'm up to. No, my life is not that exciting. I'm just kidding. Well, maybe not. I'm not doing that. And I'm also not doing. I don't know where I'm going with this bit, by the way. It's just the thing I'm doing now. So, yes. I don't know if I should actually. Or not.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Be... Okay. I'll think about it. I'll see how much work I want to put into the. Well, I actually really don't have all that much going on lately, so. But we've got some exciting stuff to announce, like our Bumble Raffle winner. Or actually, no, the Bumble Contest winner. Not the Bumble
That's
Raffle,
right.
Because we did a different contest this last episode.
We did indeed, and that person is winning a free Sonic Mania download code for the PlayStation 4. As soon as that contest went out, we had pretty much every entrant come in within about an hour. Just, here's the answers! It's like, wow, you guys know your Bumblecast trivia. And I kind of wish I had codes to give out to everybody now, but that wouldn't really be much of a contest now, would it? So, this episode's winner is...
our good friend, Mike B.
Congratulations, Mike. If you folks didn't win, it was literally by a matter of minutes. So give props to Mike for being fast with those typing fingers. Mike, we're going to send you the code via email as soon as we can. And everybody else, hang tight. We've got the Bumble Raffle coming back next episode. Kyle, tell the lovely people what the Bumble Raffle is.
Well, the Bumble Raffle is a per episode giveaway that we do. You can enter by emailing us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, or you can be a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast. All patrons get entered automatically every episode, so if you're a patron, you're already in. But you do have to email us if you are not a patron every episode to enter. So many will enter, few will win. So
let's move on to the main topic of the show.
Yes.
And that is the newest hot gadget out there, the Super NES Classic little mini bundle console thingy.
Super Nintendo is hot yet again. It was hot 27 years ago, 26 years ago, and it's hot again. It's like everything old is new again.
Super and this Nintendo. Time around, I didn't hear any stories of, you know, fist fights in the aisles or mass shortages. Like, there weren't a ton out there, but pretty much everyone I know who wanted one got one.
Yes. Yes. Pretty much everyone I know is pretty much playing with Superpower right now at this very moment. They're playing with tiny sized Superpower. I did see a few reports of people who weren't able to get one, and of course they're pretty much all sold out again, but the Nintendo was telling the truth when they said they had increased production. I think they just still didn't quite realize how much they could increase production and still make money. It's Nintendo. They're always very timid about releasing hardware. So
the library on this, looking at the list, mm-hmm. Now the NES Classic, you know, had a incredible library to it. A lot of original games that set the standard for what the time waster is today.
Sure.
But looking at the Super Nintendo list, a lot of these, to me, seem to be even more important because they set the gold standard for everything that's around today. Yeah. The NES stuff, you know, that set the groundwork, the foundation, everything that was built off it. But looking at the list for the Super Nintendo stuff, I feel like this is the bar that everyone has been trying to reach since then.
The NES Classic Library that they chose is very good. There are a couple of duds kind of here and there. I hesitate to call them duds because even like the worst games on the NES Classic are still like shining examples of at least decent NES games. Because even like the Ghosts and Goblins port on the NES is playable. And there are so many NES games that aren't playable. But the Super Nintendo, they like knocked it out of the park as far as choosing 20 games to represent their system. There are definitely some complaints, you could say. A lot of people have been saying Chrono Trigger is a grievous oversight.
Agreed.
Which, yeah, I would agree too. But you got to remember that Chrono Trigger was also released very late in the Super Nintendo's life, which I think people forget. I know I didn't quite realize that, how late it came out. It was like 95.
Oh, wow.
And I think a lot of people kind of missed out on it. They've had the chance to go back to it now, but I think people missed out on it at the time. So, I don't know if people missed out. I don't think people missed out on Yoshi's Island so much, but Nintendo has also done, you know, they haven't re-released a Super Nintendo version previously, but they re-released a port on the Game Boy Advance, and you know, it's still kind of out there. Nintendo also did push advertising for Yoshi's Island, which I don't think they did much for Chrono Trigger. So, but that's like the one grievous oversight I think that people have. Otherwise, every other selection on the SNES Classic is like, if you were going to make a list of the top 20 games for the Super Nintendo, you could do worse than the list of games that they include on the list, because it's like hit after hit after hit. Like, people crap on Kirby's Dream Course as like, oh, the one game that's like not up to the same standards as the rest of them. I'm like, well,
it is an odd selection.
I don't think so. I think it's a great selection, but I love that game. And I think it's a good game to kind of showcase the because it's just you needed a good multiplayer game, and I think that's one of the best on the system.
Okay.
So that would be a good way to showcase that. And
when you
also
put it next to Kirby Superstar.
Oh, sure.
Kirby Superstar kind of eclipses the entire Kirby library almost by itself.
Kirby Superstar is on a completely another level that I don't think any other Kirby game even comes close to ever. Like, there's something about Kirby Superstar that it's just like they freaking caught lightning in a bottle with Kirby Superstar as far as Kirby goes, and it's like, well, we've been trying to make the same game ever since, and we just can't do it, dang it.
And that's not to knock any of the other Kirby games.
Oh, absolutely not.
Pretty much Kirby's gold, but
Kirby's
Superstar.
Yeah, Kirby's always fun, but the gold shining standard of Kirby is always going to be Superstar, I think. But
now, I would imagine some folks would prefer to see Donkey Kong Country 2 over Donkey Kong Country the original.
Oh,
but
that's been something I've seen too, and I'm going to disagree with that personally.
Really?
Yeah, Donkey Kong Country 2. It's a fantastic game. I like it a lot. It is as an actual game, it is better. It does improve in almost every way on the original Donkey Kong Country, but it's not nearly as important, and it doesn't have as much of a legacy as the original.
Okay, I could see that.
And I think that's kind of what Nintendo chose it for. Donkey Kong Country, at the time it came out, was a big deal. Donkey Kong Country 2, you know, it was still definitely a very popular game, but I don't think it has that sort of, it doesn't have that place in the SNES library that DKC-1 does, because it's, DKC-1 was huge. Right. It was one of those things that people, it caught people's attention for the Super Nintendo and kept them playing it for another year or two while Nintendo dawdled on getting the N64 out. So, that and the technology they used for that. So the technology was kind of pioneered by DKC-1 and then perfected over time with DKC-2 and 3. Because DKC-2 and 3, they definitely look better than the first game, and they're more playable. But I think there's just something about that importance of the original game, and that's why they chose it.
Would you say the same goes for Mega Man X?
Maybe. I don't think X 2 and 3 are celebrated quite as much, though. And I think I haven't seen anybody complain about Mega Man X being the one that's chosen over 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
I like 2 and 3 a lot, but I think X is, everything I've seen about X is like, it's the perfect platformer. It's the perfect Mega Man game. Like, so many people say that Mega Man X is like, I keep using the term gold standard, but it really is kind of the gold standard.
It is.
So that would be why, I think, why they went with Mega Man X. What do you think? You think they should have gone with X2 or 3? I think Mega Man X was the best choice, but that's just me.
See, I didn't get to play the Super Nintendo as much as other folks growing up, because we were a Genesis household.
Sure.
And most of my experience of people's takes on these games comes after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious if someone, where you, I think, would be have your finger a little closer to the pulse, if you knew, you know, what one within, say, the original four would have been better accepted. Because after that, things kind of went off the rails. But we're getting into Mega Man discussion, and that's a whole other show.
I played Mega Man X during its time. So, yeah, I think Mega Man X is the one that people would, if they had gone with 2 or 3, I think people would have been okay with that. But Mega Man X, the original, I think is the one that they would have, that people want to play.
And along that line, Super Metroid remains pretty much the undisputed champion of the franchise.
Yeah. That's the thing about Super Nintendo. All of the games, pretty much all of the games that were released for it that are part of long-running franchises, like, for some reason, the best ones seem to be the Super Nintendo. It's because you got Super Metroid, Kirby Superstar,
Super Mario World messed with the formula so much.
Arguably, the Mario World games, either one. They just did that so much where it's like, okay, these are like perfect games, practically pitch perfect as far as, you know, just gameplay and fun and visual design and everything. So there was just something
in the past,
right? Yeah, there's something about the Super Nintendo era that's just like some of the best games ever made released on the Super Nintendo and on the Genesis. I don't want to leave out the Genesis because I think it was just that 16-bit era, man. There's something about it where it's just like everyone was, I don't know if it was the competition driving each other, where you had the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo going at it, so the developers were putting in their best work, either against each other or like just for themselves, just to prove to themselves they could do it. I don't know what it was. There's something about it, though, where the Genesis and Super Nintendo had like some of the best games ever made, and that will probably never be topped.
Now, I'm going to tread on sacred ground here.
Sure.
A couple of games that I think were incredibly important because of what they set out, but have far since been eclipsed by their sequels.
Oh, sure. There's definitely plenty of
Mario Kart and F-Zero.
Yes. I would agree with that. Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Because there are some purists out there that would get into a bloody fistfight over the original Mario Kart being the best.
Will they?
I have seen it.
Huh. Hmm. My favorite is Mario Kart 64, so.
Yes.
Which has its own problems, mind you.
Oh, sure.
But I think that it's just, I think Mario Kart 64 is a nostalgic thing. Then again, I also have a lot of nostalgia for Super Mario Kart. It was the second Super Nintendo game I ever owned. So, I don't know, but yeah, Super Mario Kart, the original, is a lot of fun, but it has been, it's been vastly outmoded by its sequels. So I'd agree with that. Same with F-Zero. I love the original F-Zero, but like F-Zero X and GX are such startling improvements over that, that it's like they can't even really compare.
And yet the sense of speed that they managed to maintain, even in the original, is staggering.
Oh, sure. And on the original F-Zero? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a really good job with the original F-Zero as far as making it a really fun tech demo. And that's the thing. People harp on tech demos sometimes, but, you know, I actually, you know, if you make a good, fun tech demo, I'm okay with that. You don't have to have super deep content. You don't have to have a whole lot of it. But if it's fun, and F-Zero is a lot of fun. So I definitely appreciate the inclusion of it. I'm a little surprised that they didn't include their other tech demo, Pilot Wings, but
I've seen that one brought up a lot. People going, where's Pilot Wings?
Yeah, I don't think Pilot Wings is quite as good as people remember it. It's fun. It's an alright game, but I don't think it's quite as good as people remember it. Pilot Wings 64 was an improvement. So, but Pilot Wings is not a bad game. It's just I don't think it needed to be on here. So
one that absolutely had to be, and it's so good that it is Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars, perhaps the finest Mario RPG, period.
Yeah, I've seen arguments both for and against it, actually, recently. I've seen some people who have replayed it and are like, it's good, but it's not as good as I remember, I think some people were saying.
Well, they're wrong.
But I like Mario RPG. I only ever played it at a friend's house, though. Never owned it. Never rented it for myself. So,
unfortunately, I will say that it has aged a little clunkily. What with the isometric platforming, the old school RPG menu navigating styles, and you know, go to town, buy next round of upgrades. You know,
it has
can be a little tedious if that's not your cup of tea. Sure.
It has a very square Super Nintendo Final Fantasy gameplay feel to it that is, you know, it's either you love it or you hate it, or it's aged, or depending on how well it's aged for you, whether you can deal with that or not.
But the music is phenomenal. The sprite work is still impressive for the era.
It still
and
looks
the difficulty good. Spikes can be daunting, but it also doesn't feel cheap.
Yeah, it does get mired in some of that mid-90s square, like, story being overblown and ridiculous. But it has some good characters and some really neat designs, and, you know, it really set the groundwork for like Paper Mario and the Mario Superstar Saga series. So you have to give it props for that.
Absolutely. Another fantastic RPG is Secret of Mana, if nothing else for the music and art design.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed that they didn't manage to sneak a third controller port on the SNES Classic so you could actually play it three players, but
yeah.
I wonder if that's even possible. Like, if someone could come up with an adapter to split one of those connections so you could have a third player.
Well, there are some ingenious people out there. A little off topic, but something I saw just the other day was somebody took an old Virtual Boy and turned it into an adjustable arcade cabinet.
Really?
Yep, the mask and everything was on a mobile rig that you could adjust to your height so you could comfortably stand there. And the controls were turned into a couple of joysticks and buttons so you could stand and play the Virtual Boy.
Oh, neat. I'm kind of surprised that that someone hasn't retrofitted a Virtual Boy with a modern VR headset inside.
Virtual Boy now on the Oculus Rift.
Just use a shell of the Virtual Boy and put an $800 headset inside it. I don't think that's probably why it hasn't happened, because nobody has. Well, I guess I think they're down to $500, $400 now. But either way, I don't think anybody wants to spend that kind of money just to hack it open and throw it inside a Virtual Boy. At least not yet. Eventually, I hope we'll get there. But anyway, I still want that.
Now, I've been holding off because otherwise this would be the only thing we'd be talking about. But the one game that I'm most excited to see on there, that I am amazed is there and tickled that it is finally out, is Star Fox 2.
Oh, I thought you were going to make a joke.
Nope. I am legit excited to see this baby finally out there.
And be like, I'm so excited they put on this game. I can't even remember all the games that are on it right now. I'm so excited they put on, I can't believe it, they put on, I don't know. They're all good games, so you can't really make a joke about that. You can't be like, I'm so excited they put on Ice Climber.
Only unlocked after 200 hours of gameplay and you hold all the buttons on all two controllers.
Yeah. Did you know you have to actually unlock Star Fox 2 in the SNES Classic?
I didn't know it was unlocked. How do you unlock it?
You play the first level of Star Fox.
Okay, that's
you play right. Corn Area. Yeah, that's it. It's real easy.
I hate the collections that put full games behind tricky things to achieve.
Oh, man.
Just give me the games. I bought the collection for the games. Give them to me.
Yeah, the Mega Man X collection, I think they lock Mega Man Battle and Chase behind, having to beat the first three games or something like that. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's way too much. That's more effort than I want to put into it. I'm out of here. I'll find another way to play it. Thank you very much.
And I've heard some reviews coming down on Star Fox 2 because of the limitations of what the hardware can do and the limitations of what the visuals can be. But for pity's sake, it's a Super Nintendo.
Sure.
They were doing full 3D graphic rendering flying in 3D space. Mm-hmm. They were doing all range mode on a 16-bit bloody console before they moved to 64.
Sure.
It's going to be rough around the edges. That's not the point. The point is, this is a fully completed game, a sequel to a beloved genre-creating game that was shelved and forgotten by most who aren't obsessive. Like me. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling out anybody else, just me. And now it's out. It's done. It's here. It's for realsies. And that just... If you aren't a huge fan of Star Fox, this would be the equivalent of, say, Sonic Extreme coming out in full.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's just... It's that impossible dream that has come to fruition.
Yeah. I liked how the developers actually had a release party when it was announced that the game was coming out. And they're like, oh, yay, it's finally happening. Let's have a party. Because I think it's Dylan Cuthbert. He's the main guy behind Star Fox 1 and 2. And he still lives in Japan. And I guess he got all the old guard together and they got together and, went to a bar and had a good time because their game's finally coming out, 20 plus years after it's supposed to. Hey. But yeah, I have played this one. I've played both betas. I played both the betas that have been dumped and the final version. And I don't think it holds up to Star Fox 1. It's very it's a very free and open experience. Did you play Star Fox Command?
Yes.
It has a lot of elements of 64 and Command kind of combined,
right?
And I think that in terms of actually ignoring the importance of Star Fox 2 actually getting a release and just looking at it as a game in the Star Fox franchise, I think that in terms of fun and gameplay, it's definitely trounced by 64 and even Command, because it takes the best, or Command takes the Command and 64 take the best ideas from Star Fox 2, and Star Fox 2 is kind of just left with kind of middling ideas. So, but Star Fox 2 is a very fun game. I don't know if it would have been on this collection if it weren't for its status as a legendary, unreleased, finished but unreleased game.
Right.
There's some, I don't know, that just seems like they would have definitely put the original Star Fox on here, but I think Star Fox 2 would have been passed over.
Interesting.
Yeah, if it wasn't for its status, I don't think it would have been part of this 20 plus one game collection, which that's kind of hilarious how Nintendo's marketing that, but whatever. 20 plus one game. Well, yay, I can do math.
In addition to that, there was Street Fighter 2.
This was one that I am kind of angry about.
Oh.
Yeah, they chose the wrong version. I'm serious. I'm 100% serious. They did, what is it, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo? Or is it just Street Fighter 2 Turbo?
I'm not sure.
Do you have the, are you looking at a list? Because I'm not, actually.
I'm looking at a graphical list. Give me a second.
Okay. Let's see. I want to see this. I want to make sure, because I want to say that Super Street Fighter 2 is the... Okay, it is just regular Street Fighter 2 Turbo. Okay. It's hard to keep these straight.
Right, because there's like 500 different flavors of Street Fighter.
To keep these different variations straight. But yeah, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo is the one... Or Super Street Fighter 2, for me, is the pinnacle of the series. And it has Cammy. So they're going to skip over the one with Cammy and go with the... with Turbo, and I'm going to be sad about that. Super Street Fighter 2 the subtitle is The New Challengers. So that was the one where they added the four new characters.
I see.
They had Cammy, DJ, T-Hawk, and I'm forgetting the fourth character now. I'm sorry about that. My brain is broken! But, yeah, they should have gone with that one, because I think that one is that's the final Street Fighter 2 on the Super Nintendo, and it was the best one for me. But I think Turbo, I know why they went with Turbo, because it was infinitely more popular. It's the one people remember the most, but Super Street Fighter 2 would have been the better choice to me.
Also was Super Punch-Out, which pretty much, I guess, set the standard for what the best version, the Wii game, would have been.
Yeah, I've seen a few arguments about whether Super Nintendo or Wii is the better version. Super Punch-Out definitely feels more like the arcade game, which is interesting. I don't like the arcade game quite as much as the NES version, but I can appreciate the feel of it. So it still works, and Super Punch-Out has a lot of really creative character designs and all that fun stuff. It just looks impressive because of how big the character sprites are, too. So it's definitely a good game. It's definitely a worthwhile inclusion on here.
Then we have Castlevania IV.
Yeah, I would be very, very surprised if they had not included Castlevania IV, because it is so freaking good.
I'm not as familiar with the Castlevania series. I know one kind of set up what was the Metroidvania style. Two gets a lot of flack because of its weird RPG elements.
No.
Beyond that, I'm not as familiar with it until we get into the more modern games.
I think you're getting that kind of backwards. Super Castlevania or Castlevania 1 was a very straightforward platformer. There wasn't anything even remotely Metroidvania about it.
Really? Okay, I'm just talking out of the side of my face.
No, Castlevania 2 is the one where they started, they kind of started dabbling in that, but I don't think they had, they didn't quite have a grasp on what they were trying to do yet. So Castlevania 2 falls a little flat and is really freaking hard because of it. But it does have that exploration aspect, you know, returning back and forth between different areas to find new upgrades and stuff. It's very, very much a proto Metroidvania in that sense. Castlevania 3 is a little bit more straightforward and personally, I think, has the best soundtrack in the series. It's also ridiculously difficult. It's probably the most difficult game in the series of the original three. And then you have Castlevania 4, which is just a straight up remake of the original Castlevania. That's exactly what it is. It's just the original Castlevania. It's straight on platforming. There aren't any RPG elements. It's just, it's a solid, and it's a really solid platformer too. It's, I guess it's up to the individual whether you think it's an improvement over the original Castlevania or not, but it's a really good game.
After that, we have Final Fantasy III.
AKA Final Fantasy VI. Yes.
Which is just, oh boy.
Hmm. I don't like this game all that much. But it is one that had to be included. I personally like Final Fantasy V and IV. Five and four are better for me than three, or than six. I'm just going to refer to it as six from here on out. But it is, I think, of the Super Nintendo SNES games, it's the most celebrated, so they kind of had to include it. So it makes sense.
I get all turned around because of the numerical system and, you know, can't remember which way I learned which. Is this the one with Terra, or is this a different one?
This is the one with Terra.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also just, like, not an RPG guy, so my experience with most Final Fantasies is a little limited and somewhat secondhand. So take with that what you will. My opinion is kind of colored by other opinions. So it is a legendary game, though, that should be here. It looks great. It sounds great. Some people like the story. I think it's a little melodramatic myself, but that's typical 90s Square, so I don't know what else you expect.
You could argue that's Square in general.
Well, they've gotten worse, actually, now that I think about it. A lot worse.
Like Kingdom Hearts, Kyle, come on.
Yeah, and Final Fantasy 13. Talk about melodrama. Now Final Fantasy 13 is a beautiful game, but yeah, anyway, yeah, Final Fantasy 3, a worthwhile inclusion for sure. I'd be a little surprised if it weren't on here.
And then we have Contra 3.
Yes, the Alien Wars. Now this is one of those awesome platformers. This is right up there with Mega Man X in terms of platformers on the Super Nintendo, man. This is a rad game. This game is also ridiculously hard, but it's amazing. It's one of those like testosterone fueled action games that's like you can't even believe it. There's like a whole level in this game, Ian, where there's a ton of missiles flying across the screen and you are jumping between each one.
Yes.
And holding on to them.
Yes.
And there's the enemies like coming down all over the place, and it's so freaking cool. It's so freaking ridiculous. It's like, have you ever seen that Arnold movie Commando?
Yes.
It's like that, except even more incredible.
The movie where the first 30 minutes is just him carrying logs and doing training regimen. And that's the one, because some of the Arnold movies blur together for me, but I think that's the one where he's having this big shootout with a bunch of bad guys. And there's this beautiful garden, And yes. He's, you know, raining molten lead across all these hedge mazes, and none of the flowers move. Butter, blood splaying everywhere, people getting blown to bits. The flowers are perfectly
fine.
It's
perfect. It's wonderful. I love that movie. It's pretty much...
I kind of miss the 90s action flick, you know?
Yeah, I do too. The 80s and 90s. That's the same. They're the same, really. But yes, it is pretty much like Commando the game with Alien. combined with Aliens. Yeah, you really can't. You really cannot. Have you seen, speaking of Commando, have you seen that YouTube video that replaces the sound effects and music from that scene, the garden shootout scene in Commando with Contra sound effects and music?
I have not. I need to find this.
You do. You really do. It uses Super C sound effects and music. So it's hilarious, and it works so freaking well. So, yeah, you guys got to check that out if you haven't. But, yeah, Contra 3, very good. Very good games. The top-down sections are a little wonky, but I think just in terms overall, it's a great action platformer.
Talking about fighting aliens, next on the list is Earthbound, which never played any of the Mother series.
I have played a tiny bit of it, and I have seen a lot of it secondhand, and I will say definitely a worthy inclusion. It's aesthetic, I know, doesn't appeal to some people. And it takes a little while for it to actually really get going. But once it does, there's a lot of really good stuff going on. And its inspiration to like Undertale and stuff is one of those things where it's like, okay, I see why this is so important and why it needs to be on here. Just from seeing it played, I understood, like, okay. Yeah, this is one of those Super Nintendo games that is definitely legendary for a reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And finally, we have Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
Ah, yes. This is arguably another one of the weaker picks, at least to me. It's a good game. It's a great game, but I don't know. It seems like it's on the level of Kirby's Dream Course, where it's kind of like if everything was an S tier, I think Ghouls and Ghosts and Kirby's Dream Course, sorry, would be like an A tier Super Nintendo game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's good though. It's really good, and the music is great. Of course, I always praise the music. All of these, every single one of these games has excellent music.
Well, most of those soundtracks are what are used onward into today because they got it right the first time.
Most of these soundtracks are the ones that are celebrated the most in when it comes to gaming. Like, for some, it's just like some of the best soundtracks ever are right here on this freaking box. On this tiny little plastic box.
I've heard one person speculate that the reason why the soundtracks from the NES era and the Super Nintendo era are so iconic is because they had such limited sound fronts that you had to have a strong melody because you couldn't really inflate it with any of the bells and whistles. You had to have, you know, what you had was what you got.
Sure.
So they were able to focus without being distracted by any other foof that, you know, because nowadays we have full orchestral remixes, and which are great and fine and all, but if you don't have that hook, it doesn't mean anything. All of these had such good hooks.
It was limited in the same way, kind of the same way you're limited as a rock band, like as a real life rock band. I mean, you only have a certain number of voices, a certain number of instruments to work with in a band like that. And I think the same thing kind of holds true for earlier video games. So you kind of have to cut through the crap and just come up with something just really strong and listenable. I definitely mostly agree with that, but I think there are some really good examples of more ambient styles and, you know, kind of less in your face stuff on both consoles, but one on this particular one that we've already talked about would be Super Metroid.
Oh, yeah.
Super Metroid's soundtrack is, first of all, an amazing feat of composition. And it still has really strong melodies, though. They're just kind of hidden. I don't know. There's something about Super Metroid's music that's like, a lot of it is infinitely hummable, and you don't even realize it's getting stuck in your head until after you're done playing it. But it has it has such good music, but it's all very ambient. Not all of it, but a lot of it's very ambient and kind of airy and more
kind of haunting in some
ways. Haunting. Yeah, that's a good term for it. Rather than being like outright in your face, it definitely does not sound like a Mario game, for example. And speaking of which, did we skip over Mario World and Yoshi's Island?
Well, we touched upon them.
Oh, okay.
But the fact that Super Mario World took the Mario formula and just turned it on its head, expanded upon it in so many different ways, and then Yoshi's Island took that and turned it on its head to become its own kind of platforming style. To have that much innovation just within one console generation is really impressive.
The funny thing about Mario World and Yoshi's Island is they're actually, the way that they were released, they kind of bookend the entire life cycle of the Super Nintendo. Super Mario World, of course, was the launch game pack-in for the system, and was probably the main selling point for a lot of people. It is one of those legendary Mario games. I know I go back and forth on whether I prefer Mario 3 or Mario World. I think just in terms of like how much content, how many ideas are packed into Mario 3, I really appreciate, but I also appreciate like how streamlined Mario World is. Mario World cuts down on a lot of the crap that's in Mario 3, like superfluous items and stuff, power-ups that are kind of like just one-time fun use things, but they only have a specific application, like the frog suit, for example.
Right.
Mario World kind of ditches that and slims down the power-ups to just like the essentials. And I don't know, there's just something about it, though, that Mario World just has that. It's just really well designed, I think, is what it comes down to. And Yoshi's Island looks gorgeous, sounds gorgeous. It's essentially the, if you look at Super Mario World next to Yoshi's Island, it's like a freaking night and day. You wouldn't even think they were on the same system based on how far they've come along. And Super Mario World launched with the system, and Yoshi's Island is like almost right at the end. It's not the last game, but it's pretty close. So they bookend each other. They bookend the system well, I think. You can see where it started and where it goes. And it started out supremely strong and just went like insanely strong at the end there. So yeah, that's the SNES classic.
It is, it is. If you agree with us, if you don't agree with us, please let us know. We are actually looking at the YouTube comments yet again for questions and such, which brings us to the topic of the Q&A.
All right, well, let's get into the Q&A here on the BumbleCast. You can ask us questions on the YouTube channel, as Ian said, in the YouTube comments. Any video is fine anywhere you leave them. Just spray your comments everywhere. Just do it.
Ew.
Do it now. Do it right now as you're listening to this. Go down there and type in, "I'm spraying a comment here now." Go to a random old video and do it too. I don't care. Or you can email us, bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter using the hashtag BumbleCast, or on Patreon in the comments or messages over there. All right, we got some priority Q&A from the Patreon folks. This first one comes from Chris A. Have you ever thought on creating a comic book series on Saints Row or Agents of Mayhem?
I haven't really seen much of Agents of Mayhem. Played a fair bit of Saints Row, and
Agents of Mayhem really is a comic book. So
when you get down to it,
yeah, it really is.
I think
so. Saints Row, but
Saints Row would be an interesting challenge because while there are distinct storylines, there's so much variety you can do with the main character and so many side diversions that you can do that it'd be tricky deciding how exactly you want to tackle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Saints Row 2 is my favorite out of the series.
Oh yeah, mine too.
And it, would you tackle each gang story arc as like one book, or would you try to mix it up a little? Show how there's a struggle for all of the territory. I don't know. I would love to do it. It's one of those titles where, or franchises, I should say, that I don't have it already mapped out in my head. You know, like Legend of Zelda, Kirby, Star Fox, I could outline the first year's worth of material right now. No problem. Saints Row would be a little trickier. I guess it would depend on what the licensor would want to do with a comic, but I would love to give it a shot.
I think the difference is the games you mentioned is that Saints Row is open world and very open-ended.
True, true, true.
So you kind of have, I guess, your choice. Although there is a narrative that is pretty much a straightforward narrative, at least in Saints Row 2. And I think that actually is even more true of Saints Row 3 and 4, but yeah, either way, I think I would like to see you. I'd like to see you tackle that. I think you could do that, but I don't know. Agents of Mayhem really is like freaking superhero comics. They just took the engine of Saints Row 4 and built even more superpowers.
Okay.
So the characters aren't as fun as you'd think they would be being a comic style game, but I could see a comic building on that for sure. And our next one comes from Scruffy Matt. Would you guys like to see more content added to Sonic Mania through DLC, such as more zones or playable characters? If so, what? I'd personally like to see what Classic Amy would play like.
I would shell out a ludicrous amount of money for more Mania.
Mm.
I don't want to wait for sequel. I just want new stuff now. Gimme, 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 straight to the vein!
See, now, this is an interesting question, because when you ask me if I'd like to see more content added to Sonic Mania, I'm going to say no, never! No, I would never say never. Why would I say never? Why would I say never? You should have just said, okay, I know you guys want more Sonic Mania. What do you want to see added?
I'm a Scruffy. I want to see a playable Amy Rose.
I would love that, yes.
I tossed out a few ideas in Sonic Mega Drive on how I think she would play, but I would love to see what the team did with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see maybe some of the other classic characters get brought back, like maybe Mighty and Ray as a weird Sonic Tails alternate duo. I'm not quite sure what you would do with it to make them distinct, but
you also have the Chaotix characters you could throw in there. I mean, you're kind of getting into the weeds on characters throwing them all in. You're starting to get into what a lot of people complain about, which is, oh, there's too many characters and they're all dumb. But all of the characters have their fans, even Charmy.
I would even go so far as to say, and this is probably going to tick some people off, I'd like to see a classic Shadow added, mostly because I just want to see him in that super cutesy rounded look.
You want to see
perpetual scowl.
You want to see him look like Sonic?
Yes,
like Sonic.
I want to see a classic styled Shadow. Officially, I've seen folks do their own interpretations. There's one really, really good piece of fan art out there,
mm-hmm,
of Radical Highway done in the old PC wallpaper style.
Ah, yes.
Which is just really impressively done. But stage-wise, I would love to see new stuff, of course. If they do a Sonic Mania 2, which at this point I would almost assume is a given,
yeah,
I'd like to see it be almost exclusively new levels.
Mm-hmm.
But given what they did remixing the older stuff, I would love to see them take a pass at more of the classic levels. Like, maybe try out some of the Game Gear levels and beef them up.
Mm-hmm.
Just what they could do with Mystic Cave Zone by itself gets me all tingly. So
I would be like,
hey, just give them more money, more time, just give them everything. Let them just go wild.
Yeah, I'd like to see the last three stages of Sonic 3 maybe finally get some love. They're kind of ignored. Marble Garden a little bit too, but I think of, like, you have Carnival Night, you got Ice Cap, and you got Launch Base. I like Launch Base a lot. I think they could include they could do a really good job with Launch Base if they brought that one over. Ice Cap, I'm still surprised, hasn't seen, like, any remakes or anything. I thought for sure that would be the one that they'd include for Sonic Generations, but they did not. It's not my favorite zone from Sonic 3, but it is the one that I know people really gravitate towards, especially musically. That might be my opinion kind of colored on that. But
musically, I would say that visually as well, it was very, very pretty, very sparkly.
Oh, sure.
But in terms of level layout and bosses, not particularly memorable.
That's true. That's true. I think people also remember it because it was unique. It had the snowboarding section at the beginning, too.
True.
So I think that's another reason why people kind of like it. And that's also another reason why I like it. I always thought that was really freaking cool. But could definitely see them doing something fun with that. I'm just surprised at so many of the selections they chose, like Oil Ocean. And they did such a good job with it, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we went over stages we would like to see. I think Oil Ocean was on my list because the music and the color palette were just so engaging compared to a lot of the other Sonic 2 stages. But in terms of gameplay, it would have not been my first pick. They did fantastic stuff with it, but...
Yeah, I really like the way that they had Oil Ocean as part of Mirage Saloon, or the transition from Mirage Saloon to Oil
mm-hmm,
Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Really well done on that one. I like that one a lot. I don't know. I always just love the Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles levels, so any more of those would be awesome. Maybe... I don't know if this would be getting way too far out in the weeds for them, but maybe some retro remakes of levels from newer games. They did that with Generations, but I don't know, maybe choose some different levels and kind of go hog wild with that. I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult to say.
In that regard, I'd more prefer to see the modern age games get retooled on the Hedgehog engine.
Ah. Yeah. I would agree there. Yeah, they should do that instead. If they're going to do a Sonic Mania 3D edition or something, I don't know. It's not a very creative title.
And this is entirely colored by seeing folks using, I think it's Generations, or maybe...
It is Generations. What, for modding?
Yeah. Yeah, and going through, like, rebuilding some of the shadow stages, and it's like, oh, wow, this looks really cool and fun.
Yeah, it's Generations. Yeah. There's, you know, the Unleashed project, which ports and redoes a lot of the levels from Sonic Unleashed in Sonic Generations engine, making
and
them
gorgeous.
Yes, and it makes them infinitely more playable since Sonic Generations physics engine is a pretty big improvement over Unleashed. And yeah, there's a lot of really good mods, so I think they could do something like that. That would be really cool, actually. Do like a Sonic Mania style game for the 3D games. I don't know if people would be quite as in. I don't know if the mainstream would latch onto it as much, though, like they did with Sonic Mania, because Sonic Mania really appeals to retro gamers, not necessarily just people who've been playing Sonic.
Right.
While when you start getting into the 3D era, Sonic fans would love it, but I think a lot of people on the outside would be like, 3D, who wants to celebrate these crappy games? And be like,
I don't know. The older we get, the more and more I hear, you know, these folks saying, oh, Sonic Heroes is my first game. And it's like, oh, I need my back medicine now.
Yeah. It's
like, so there might be a market for it.
It's like, oh, Sonic 06 was my very first Sonic game, and I loved it. And I'm like, oh, no. You poor child. I'm so sorry. If you like Sonic 06, it's fine. It's fine. You can like it. You're allowed to like whatever you want. But it's not a good game. You can like it. It doesn't have to be good to like it. I like a lot of things that are horrible. I'm sure Ian does too, right?
Yes, but I'm not sure if I should admit this in a recorded media. Let's move on to the standard Q&A.
Yeah, well, you like me, so.
Yeah, do you?
I don't know. We haven't established this, actually. I'm kidding. We don't have to establish this right now. Maybe later. All right, to Big RG. Do you guys mind if question askers pitch some potential ideas for topics? And I say, yes, this is actually something I've been meaning to bring up. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, if there's something that you guys want to hear us talk about, by all means, say so.
Absolutely, definitely.
One of the nightmares I have is that we keep doing the show talking about stuff we like, and people are like, oh, yay. No, if you want to hear us go on and on about something, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know if you have any ideas. We obviously wouldn't be able to do every single idea that comes our way, especially if it's a topic we know, like, literally zero about. But we're always open to ideas like that. Yeah. I've been actually thinking about that a lot lately. Like, we do a lot of certain topics. We do a lot of gaming topics, especially, because we are both gamers at heart. But if you guys had other topic ideas, stuff for us to talk about, for sure we're interested in taking some ideas. Next question comes from Snowskate. Were there any plans to have Omega and Shadow alive in the Silver's new dystopian future?
Ish. Kinda. And it certainly makes sense given what 06 established and that Omega was kind of still around during Silver's time. And Shadow is functionally immortal, so it would make enough sense for him to show up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kinda avoiding those because there's a 200-year gap between the present and Silver's time. And when you have a character that transcends that gap, it immediately begs the question, what do they know from that time period?
Oh.
You know, why didn't they change anything? Why are there any questions? You know, Silver might say, how did it get this way? Why would Shadow or Omega not know? By removing them, or not introducing them and keeping that 200-year gap where, you know, whatever has happened, you preserve the timeline and you don't have to think up, oh, this is what has happened over these 200 years. Oh, wait, new game, have to retcon all of space-time. Because I've done that more than I care to, thank you very much.
Oh, you could just say, I was asleep the whole time, I don't know what happened. Or I lost my memory.
There are ways to work around it, but why put that bear trap in front of you, you know?
Yeah, why even introduce the whole concept to begin with? You could just introduce new characters with new stories to tell.
Exactly. So it has crossed my mind, but there are narrative reasons to decide just not to poke that bear with a stick.
Sure. So would it be probably fairly safe to assume that they probably were alive, but just not part of the story, maybe? Something like
it's
that.
It's a big world.
Sure. That's kind of the thing I think is like, well, they probably were there. They're just off elsewhere. Doing something else or sleeping in a 200-year time capsule. Who knows? And finally, last question comes from Stymied Thoughts. Did you have any first words planned for Bark?
I did, as a matter of fact, and I had a few scenarios on what it would be. You know, I'm not going to say what, because you never know when I might get the chance to trot this out, but you know, some thoughts were, build up the idea, oh, Bark is finally going to say something in this arc, look out for it, and then it's just some innocuous thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ouch, or, hey.
Well, yeah, it's like the Silent Bob thing.
Yeah. Well, or you know, something a little more dramatic.
Yeah.
Or, like Jay and Silent Bob go just full tilt and give him like a 3-page long monologue. I don't know. There were a lot of ideas, not that I actually settled on.
All right. Well, if you're going to have him say something, you should say all of the supporters on Patreon. you should have him say all their names.
So you don't, the challenge continues.
So you don't have to.
The challenge continues to see if I can say this in one breath. Are you ready?
All right, here we go.
Big shout out to all the people who make the Patreon Bumblecast, the Bumblecast page. All right.
All of you lovely people, we love you. You're wonderful. Give us money, please. I'm so freaking, I don't know what kind of mood I'm in. I'm just like weirdly talkative.
And well, just, that's good, because we're doing a show where you
and
talk.
And just saying things that I just come up with. Give us money, please. Are you not entertained?
Okay, this is a big shout out to everyone who makes it possible through patreon.com/bumblecast. Here we go, folks. Daniel, hey, already screwed it up. Okay,
oh,
okay,
man, that was quick. That was the fastest breath ever.
Daniel H, Alex P, Zephyr Flame, Chris A, Damo, John B, Sam Cybercat, Mike B, Connell T, Samuel P, Justin G, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Diane W, Lisa M, Artendi M, Today's Passenger, Scruffy Matt, Lee H, James G, Chevelle, Don B, Zed Fritz, Rob Man, Taco El Gato Comics, John M, S. Yavardovich 9X, James K, Overthink Films, Adam B, and Ron. So close! Oh, halfway, man. There.
The first two names got split up by a different name. It was very confusing for a moment. I was very lost. Like, wait a minute. What about Daniel H and Zephyr Flame? They're like, I don't know what they are. They're like buddy cops. Is it like a buddy cop comedy? Daniel H and Zephyr Flame?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to figure that out. Anyway, Zephyr Flame, that's a cool name, by the way. I don't know why. There's just something cool about it. Probably because it involves flames. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the Bumblecast. Ian, where can people find you and talk to you and all the things you're doing?
You can find all the news and my whole work history over at bumbleking.com or follow my rambling mentions at IanFlynnBKC on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, where I talk about things and stuff. And you can also find archived episodes of this show and many others over at kngi.org, including my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which is a video game music remix show spotlighting some of the awesome remixes and other fan-made musical things that people do for video game stuff, streaming live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on 8bitx.com.
Join us every other Monday for Bumblecast Gaming. You can find that at youtube.com/BumbleKingVideos. Or check us out on Twitch at twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming for all sorts of streaming stuff whenever Kyle and I have a chance.
And you can also check out our Bumble store at shop.spreadshirt.com/BumbleStore, where you find a whole slew of items to slap our logo onto. Get you,
show your Bumble love.
Get you a Bumble cup or a Bumble jacket or a Bumble shirt. Basically, you could get any item you want so long as you slap Bumble in front of it.
More or less.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about Spreadshirt. It's not just shirts.
It's spread over all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if that's their tagline or not. Spreadshirt.
Yeah, it ought to be, although it may not get the clientele they want. That's going to wrap us up for episode 53 of the Bumblecast. We'll see you in 2 weeks, where we'll be talking about all the good stuff that I hinted at earlier this episode and so mercilessly teased you with. Good night, everybody.
# knowing smile. I didn't smile, by the way.
Well, then what's the point?
I don't smile.
Yes, you do.
I don't have time for smiling.
You are, like, perpetually smiling.
Oh. You figured me out. It's my secret. You weren't supposed to tell anybody that.
Well, just don't put it in the final show.
Okay. I will. Maybe. You don't know me. You don't know me. You can't tell me what to do. You're not my real father. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download. Oh, were we on long enough that you had to go get your clothes out of the dryer?
Yeah, I had to put it in for the next round of drying.
Oh, okay.
You know, the timing worked out that it was an easy cut.
Okay. I was just like, huh, that's weird. That was a short dry. You must have an incredibly powerful dryer. Or you like spread it out the clothes amongst many dryers. So you had like one shirt.
I have so many.
You have so many dryers, you just put one shirt in each. I don't know. I don't know how things work. Anyway, let's go.